Climate Change the Facts. The Scientific Context by Robert M. Carter. Part 1. Robert M. Carter, Emeritus Fellow and Science Policy Advisor at the Institute of Public Affairs. Science Advisor at the Science and Public Policy Institute, Chief Science Advisor for the International Climate Science Coalition, and former professor and head of the School of Earth Sciences at James Cook University. The science of global warming is at the same time relatively simple and very complex. The simplicity exists in the elemental science that is taught in introductory earth science and meteorology courses at universities around the globe. The complexity lies in the integration of the many and diverse processes involved in climate change, some of which are poorly understood or even remain unknown, thus necessitating the use of speculative computer models to attempt to achieve further understanding. Those scientists who support the alarmist agenda of human-caused global warming tend to stress the intricacies of climate change, an approach that implies the need for, quote, experts and highly complex computer models to adjudicate on the matter. In contrast, independent scientists tend to stress the importance of the broader facts that provide the context against which the threat of a dangerous human influence on climate should be judged. In this chapter, four basic scientific facts are described that provide an essential context for intelligent discussion of the global warming issue. Thereafter, there is an explanation of the reasons for the differing advice to governments that is provided by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, and the Non-Governmental International Panel on Climate Change, NIPCC. Fuller discussion of these and related issues is provided in my 2010 book, Climate, the Counter-Consensus. The Context of Contemporary Climate Change. Context 1. Error bounds on reconstructing the global average temperature from thermometer data. The main record used by the IPCC for analyzing contemporary climate change is compiled by averaging individual temperature records of varying quality and length from around the globe. This, the Hadcrut record, the name being a combination of the data sets of two organizations, namely the Hadley Center of the UK Met Office and the Climatic Research Unit, CRU, at the University of East Anglia, has a number of known deficiencies. These include that it is far too short to be treated as a serious climate record, being equivalent to just 5 climate data points, is probably inadequately corrected for the urban heat island effect, and is subject to other large errors. For example, amongst the papers released in the 2009 ClimateGate scandal was a previously unpublished 2005 CRU contractual report by Philip Brohan et al., which contained a careful analysis of the likely error bounds for the Hadcrut 3 record. These authors considered January 1969 temperature data for measurement and sampling error, temperature bias effects, and the effect of limited observational coverage on large-scale averages. The analysis revealed worldwide errors in the range of 1 to 5 degrees Celsius for individual sampled area boxes, i.e., errors that far exceed the total claimed 20th century warming of 0.7 degrees Celsius. Clearly, errors for records collected earlier in the 20th century are likely to be higher still than the already large 1969 errors. Despite the claim otherwise by Brohan et al. In their 2006 paper, Uncertainty Estimates in Regional and Global Observed Temperature Changes, these results indicate that no statistically significant modern warming will be able to be inferred on the basis of Hadcrut or similar thermometer-based records until the current temperature rises over 1 degree Celsius above that computed for 1969. Though global average temperature may have warmed during the 20th century, no direct instrumental records exist that demonstrate any such warming within an acceptable degree of probability. Context 2. Natural temperature variations over geological time. It is a scientific truism that climate persistently changes through time, one manifestation of which is the changing global average temperature recorded in many geological datasets. These datasets are collected, for example, from high-latitude ice cores or oceanic seabed cores, though in the first instance, they yield local or regional temperature data, the strong commonality that exists between different paleoclimate records from widely different geographical regions, nonetheless, often reflects an underlying global signal. Because short thermometer temperature records such as Hadcrut manifestly do not comprise an adequate climate record, it is to these geological datasets that we must turn to provide the proper climatic context against which to assess modern temperature changes. A case in point is the high-quality inferred air temperature above the Greenland ice cap for the last 10,000 years. See Figure 1. This record shows, 1, that temperatures were up to a full 2 degrees warmer than today during the Holocene climactic optimum, circa 8,000 years before present BP. 2, the presence of a persistent millennial cycle of warmings and coolings, with all pre-modern peaks of this cycle, including the medieval warm period, being warmer than the late 20th century peak. And 3, an overall cooling of temperature since 8,000 years BP, which took place against the background of an increase of atmospheric carbon dioxide, CO2, of 20 parts per million, of natural origin, and as recorded in Antarctic ice cores. Though the Greenland average temperature has warmed by about 1 degree Celsius since the Little Ice Age, such warming cannot be shown to have resulted from increases in human-related CO2 emissions. The warming was also entirely unalarming in rate and magnitude when compared with other similar natural warmings that occurred over the preceding 10,000 years. Context 3. Carbon dioxide variations over geological time. It is widely misrepresented in the public domain that Earth's current levels of atmospheric CO2 are dangerously and atypically high. Such claims are false because modern CO2 levels lie near to an all-time low as assessed against the geological record. 500 million years ago, before land plant photosynthesis was operating, atmospheric CO2 attained about 15 times present-day levels, built by cumulative volcanic exhalations during 4 billion years of Precambrian time. Between about 450 and 320 million years ago, levels declined steadily from less than 4,000 parts per million to around 500 parts per million, concomitant with the evolution and diversification of land plants, and thereafter varied between about 500 and 2,000 parts per million. In effect, since about 450 million years ago, plant photosynthesis has removed CO2 from the atmosphere, after which normal sedimentary burial processes led to the conversion of original vegetation to coal, and thus the storage of former CO2 underground. Utilizing coal as an energy resource simply returns the CO2 to the atmosphere from whence it came in the first place, yielding the twin benefits of generation of cheap electricity and the greening of the planet. Why radical environmentalists view this as a problem has never been explained adequately and remains mysterious to this day. For 280 parts per million, pre-industrial, 400 parts per million, today, 560 parts per million, 2 times pre-industrial, or even 1,120 parts per million, 4 times pre-industrial, planet Earth's atmosphere would still remain in a CO2-starved state. Carbon dioxide is an essential trace gas for plant photosynthesis, and therefore vital for biodiversity and the sustenance of most planetary food chains. Adding carbon dioxide to the atmosphere is beneficial for the growth of many plants, especially cereals. And by comparison with the last 550 million years of geological history, Earth currently exists in a state of carbon dioxide starvation. Context 4. efficacy of warming caused by extra carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is a potent greenhouse gas for intercepting space-bound, and hence cooling, radiation emitted from Earth's surface at wavelengths around 14.8 microns and 9 microns within the electromagnetic spectrum. Initially, at low atmospheric concentrations, the gas therefore has a strong greenhouse effect as it blocks outgoing radiation at these wavelengths. However, the narrowness of the spectral intervals across CO2 intercepts radiation results in a rapid saturation of its effect, such that every doubling in the concentration of CO2 enhances the greenhouse effect by a constant amount. This is reflected as the negative logarithmic relationship that exists between extra CO2 and the warming that it causes. Because of this logarithmic relationship, the amount of warming caused by increasing quanta of CO2 depends upon the level of CO2 already in the atmosphere, and diminishes steadily in a less temperature bang for every incremental carbon dioxide buck pattern. Given the pre-industrial starting point of 280 parts per million of atmospheric CO2, only minor additional warming will occur in response to the much feared doubling of CO2 to 560 parts per million. While scientists generally agree that this is prima facie warming, will accumulate to about 1 degree Celsius for a doubling, IPCC scientists allege that the positive feedback effect from more water vapor, itself generated by the initial CO2 forced warming, will result in a total warming of about 3 to 6 degrees Celsius. However, this speculation conflicts with other empirical data and is therefore controversial. Though CO2 is a greenhouse gas, its warming efficacy rapidly diminishes in logarithmic fashion as atmospheric concentrations rise. When both positive, example, enhanced water vapor, and negative, enhanced low-level cloud feedback effects, and geological climate records are taken into consideration, little likelihood exists that conceivable levels of human emissions will cause dangerous future warming. Common ground amongst global warming protagonists. These four contextual scientific matters discussed earlier all point to a lack of alarm regarding dangerous global warming caused by human-related greenhouse gas emissions, despite which a vigorous public debate about the matter continues. This debate is strongly antagonistic, belying the fact that a large measure of scientific agreement exists between the debating protagonist about most of the facts of the matter. The common scientific ground and the main matters that remain in dispute are summarized in Table 1. Table 1, the essence of the scientific debate. The common ground includes that climate has always changed and always will. That CO2 is a greenhouse gas, the accumulation of which results in warming of the lower atmosphere. That post-industrial human-related emissions comprise a new source of atmospheric CO2. That a global warming of around 0.7 degrees Celsius may have occurred in the 20th century. That global warming has ceased over the last 17 years. The three key science issues remaining in dispute are the amount of net warming that is or will be produced by the, quote, extra human-related emissions, usually termed the climate sensitivity issue, which equates in turn with the amount of warming that will be produced by a doubling of carbon dioxide over its pre-industrial level. Also, whether any actual evidence exists for dangerous warming of human causation over the last 50 years. And whether the IPCC's computer models can provide accurate climate predictions 100 years into the future. Why is this common ground not more generally understood? The answer is simple. Since the formation of the IPCC in 1988, a wide-ranging and worldwide propaganda campaign has been conducted to raise public alarm about global warming. Though initially promulgated by environmental organizations commercial lobbyists, example the wind power industry, and the financial markets, the global warming bandwagon soon attracted the attention of politicians because of the electoral advancement that it promised, and has all the while been egged on by a ceaselessly alarmist press corps. All the classic tools of propaganda and spin have been deployed for the advancement of public alarm about global warming, including scientific malfeasance, noble cause corruption, the makeover of formerly independent expert groups such as academies of science, the indoctrination of school children from kindergarten onwards, and the ad hominem demonization of scientists who fail to conform to the orthodox IPCC view. The many hundreds of risible claimed negative effects of global warming, many of which are actually beyond parody, are summarized in a hilarious list of claimed warmed misadventures compiled by UK engineering professor John Prignell. During the 1990s and the first few years of the present century, public opinion was visibly affected by this barrage of pseudoscientific propaganda, as reflected by a clear majority of the citizens of OECD countries regularly expressing their concern in opinion polls. Over the last 10 years, however, and thanks not a little to the assiduous efforts of independent scientists and organizations such as the NIPCC, public opinion has swung away from the global warming scare and other similarly overhyped environmental causes. At the same time, many cartoonists and comedians have started to lampoon the more ridiculous claims of the global warming alarmists. As one expressed it, "So just when those supporting climate alarm thought they had everything settled and nailed down, a gale of discontent started to blow. Cartoonist heaven, really. We love the spectacle of powerful people preparing their policy against strong winds and rough seas, frantically rigging up fragile, flapping sails of spin and blather. If you're going to spend over $15 billion of taxpayers' money on desalinated water, or manage a potentially ruinous carbon dioxide trading scheme, then you certainly don't want to be questioned too closely, let alone lampooned, about the scientific details that you misunderstood or got wrong." Science should not be about emotion or politics. Yet it is uncomfortably true that public discussion of the global warming issue has for many years been conducted far more in accordance with those criteria than it has been concerned with science per se. There are three prime reasons for this. First, as a branch of the United Nations, the IPCC is itself an intensely political and not a scientific body. As its chairman, Dr. Rajendra Pachauri, observed in an interview with the Guardian newspaper, "We are an intergovernmental body, and we do what the governments of the world want us to do. If the governments decide we should do things differently and come up with a vastly different set of products, we would be at their beck and call." To boot, the IPCC charter requires that the organization investigates not climate change in the round, but solely global warming caused by human greenhouse emissions, a blinkered approach that consistently damages all IPCC pronouncements. Second, from local green activist groups up to behemoth NGOs like Greenpeace and the World Wildlife Federation, over the last 20 years, the environmental movement has espoused saving the planet from global warming as its leitmotif. This has had two devastating results. One is that radical environmentalists have worked relentlessly to sow misinformation about global warming in both the public domain and the education system. And the other is that faced with the widespread propagandization of public opinion in young persons, and also by strong lobbying from powerful self-interested groups like government research scientists, alternative energy providers, and financial marketeers, politicians have had no choice but to fall into line. Whatever their primary political philosophy, all active politicians are daily mindful of the need to assuage the green intimidation and bullying to which they and their country's industries and citizens are incessantly subjected, and to which no Western country has yet devised a feasible counter. Third, and perhaps most influential of all, with very few exceptions, major media outlets have provided unceasing support for measures to, quote, stop global warming. This behavior appears to be driven by a combination of the left wing, liberal in the U.S. sense, and green personal beliefs of most reporters, and the commercial nose of experienced editors who understand that alarmist environmental reporting sells, both product and advertising space. As one experienced editor has written, "The publication of bad news is not a journalistic vice. It's a clear instruction from the market. It's what consumers, on average, demand." As a newspaper editor, I knew, as most editors know, that if you print a lot of good news, people stop buying your paper. Conversely, if you publish the correct mix of doom, gloom, and disaster, your circulation swells. I have done the experiment. Climate Change: The Facts is published by Stockade Books. All rights reserved.